Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. It's our delight to have you on board with us today. We're delighted to have you join in the dialogue and discussion each day on this broadcast. Let me remind you that telephone number is 904. If you're out of the area code, it's 904-831-0917, 831-0917. Your telephone call gets you directly through to the studios and right there on microphones so that we can entertain your dialogue and discussion about the issue of the day. We're going to be talking about today stealing the election. Stealing the election. I find it fascinating, ladies and gentlemen, that the Democrats have already said this. Joe Biden says it's my greatest concern, my single greatest concern, that the president is going to try to steal the election. He says that Trump and his allies are going to try to cheat, steal, collude with foreign powers, and try to win by November's election. I don't have anything that's a greater statement of irony than for the Democrats to be making that statement, when in fact, I believe that will be the focus of what they will attempt to do. During this broadcast, in a few moments, we're going to be introducing a very special guest that has written a book on the subject and that will be highly informative for you, our listeners. But before we get into that portion of our broadcast today, let me remind you, as we do this broadcast each day, we do so based on the authority of the Scripture. I call it the written, revealed, inspired, infallible, inerrant Word of God. It's called having a central biblical worldview. And that central biblical worldview recognized the fact that God created the home, He created government, He created the church, and He did so in that order. So anything from Genesis 1:1 through the Revelation text, in Revelation chapter 22, it is talking about doctrinal, theological, biblical, family, political, social issues. So any of those issues ought to be that which is understood by the Christian, that we'll be able to converse and talk about and have the dialogue and discussion on those subjects. It was Jesus that said in John 8:31 and 32, if you continue in my word, then you're my disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth. The truth shall make you free. And then the Lord Jesus himself said in John 14:6, I am truth. And then further he states very dogmatically, as I call it, in John 17:17, thy word is truth. Truth is something that is eluded. Truth is something that is dissed in society today. Truth is something that you find rarely being sought after. It was the secularist George Orwell many years ago that said the further a society drifts from the truth, the more it will hate those who speak it. And we find Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and AOC and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, I believe they would not know how to spell the word truth if they were confronted with that responsibility. It is the 15th century theologian and church reformer Jan Hus that made a very powerful statement about truth. He said, faithful Christians, seek the truth, listen to the truth, learn the truth, love the truth, tell the truth, live the truth, and defend the truth even to death. And that ought to be the challenge for every Christian, every listener under the sound of my voice today. As you join in this dialogue and discussion, we pray that it will be because you're seeking the truth. You love the truth. You want to defend the truth. Ladies and gentlemen, this portion of today's broadcast is sponsored by Tools for Tam. Tools for Tam is an outdoor power equipment dealership company specializing in the turnkey business packages for individuals looking to own your own landscape or lawn care business. Tools for Tam carries the equipment line for the homeowners with brands like Honda and Echo. Tools for Tam carries a full line of hurricane preparedness equipment, especially for the Honda generators. They have a knowledgeable staff to answer all of your questions about power generation backup equipment, as well as the power equipment for landscape, lawn care for homeowners, as well as for the professional. Tools for Tam is located at 11291. That's 11291. 11291 Old San Augustine Road. That's right at the intersection of I-295 and Old San Augustine Road. It's where the gigantic 165-foot flagpole stands with Old Glory flowing 24/7. Find that flagpole at the intersection of I-295 and Old San Augustine Road. The base of that flagpole, you'll find the home of Tools for Time. ToolsForTime.com. ToolsForTime.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Nancy Pelosi and AOC and Chuck Schumer and what I call the socialist, Marxist, BLM, communist Democrats simply cannot win an election. That's my dogmatic statement. You've heard me say that multitudes of times on this broadcast. Therefore, they're planning on a mechanism by which they could take the election November the 3rd. They've tried everything possible, ladies and gentlemen. They tried to prevent his candidacy. The Democrats on the left tried to do all they could. They came up with the Russiagate. Then they had the $40 million expense by the Robert Mueller investigation. And then the alleged unfounded process of impeachment that did not work. It backfired, in fact, on them. Then the Ukraine accusation and the probing as a result of that. And now they plan on somehow, some way, taking the election November the 3rd, 2020. This is the reason I've said, ladies and gentlemen, it is so vital that Christians vote. Let me remind you once again, 2016 election, about 31 million, not 1,000, 31 million Christians fail to vote. You have now until October the 3rd to register to vote if you're going to vote November the 3rd. And the thing that we need to do as conservatives, as Christians, as patriot Americans, is to recognize our responsibility to vote. I think that Sleepy Joe, as the president calls him, is a Trojan horse president that in reality would be a puppet president with Kamala Harris and the left basically making all the choices and decisions from the president's office. So let me remind you, ladies and gentlemen, as we think about this election on November the 3rd, we need to understand that there is a process in place, a protocol in place for an election that is being belied, is being undermined, and a contriving motive behind the socialist, Marxist, BLM Democrats on the left. In fact, I'm looking at an article that says Democratic data firm predicts chaos on election night with Donald Trump set for a landslide victory, which will take days to be revealed as victory for Joe Biden, thanks to the post office. And I could go on because it's a lengthy article, but the main thing that is stated in the article is that they're projecting already, the Democrats already projecting that there's going to be major chaos and confusion over the real winner of the November the 3rd election. In fact, I just read a very serious article that said there's going to be a major dispute on the election. Here's an article, dispute from the mail-in ballots could take naming the winner impossible by January the 20th. Listen to this one little brief blurb before we introduce our special guest on Let's Face the Issues today. Title of the article says, dispute from mail-in ballots could take naming the winner impossible by January the 20th. In a speech last week, President Donald Trump said that this mail-in ballot for the coming election, this will be the greatest catastrophe, one of the greatest catastrophes in the history of the country. That's how serious it is, he stated. Further in this article, although many assume that Trump's talking about fraud mail-in balloting, mail-in ballots will make fraud easier. The real danger is extreme delay in gathering the reporting for the election results. Disputes over ballot validity will descend on state and federal courts, all of it eventually reaching the Supreme Court. The 2000 fight over the Florida results was finally decided by the courts December the 12th of 2000. And this was one dispute about one county in one state. So the answer to this question is, what could go wrong with the mail-in ballots? The article says plenty. In the recent primary election in New York, results in the one race could not be reported until 6 weeks after the balloting, as the representatives of rival candidates fought over the validity of the mail-in ballots, as the Washington Post reported. Now, here's the thing that makes it so interesting, ladies and gentlemen. As the center of the mess in the mass influx of mail-in ballots, 403,000 returned ballots in the city this cycle versus 23,000 that returned and determined to be invalid in 2016. And the article goes on to talk about the danger of what it can take place in relationship to the mail-in ballots. But ladies and gentlemen, I'm not an expert in that realm, but we have a guest today that has written a book on that subject. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm thankful today and delighted to have on Let's Face the Issues a very special guest. We're going to introduce him by some reading, giving to you some bio background so that it sets the stage for our introduction. We're going to be introducing in just a moment Ken Timmerman, and Ken is going to be talking about his new book. Let me just give you a little bio background for our special guest. Ken Timmerman is a nationally recognized investigative reporter and war correspondent who was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 for the work he's done on the expose of Iran's nuclear weapons program. Since 1995, he's run the Iran.org and a regularly meets with Iranian dissidents overseas. He lectured on Iran at the Pentagon's Joint Counterintelligence Training Academy from 2010 to 2006. From 2004 to 2011, Ken was the lead outside investigator for the consortium of law firms representing the families of the 9/11 victims. In 2012, he was the Republican nominee for Congress in Maryland's 8th District. Ken also is a witness to the Persecuted Church. His 2018 novel, ISIS Begins, which is a novel on the Iraq War, is based on the recent trips to Mosul and Amman, Jordan. For the past 30 years, Ken has covered both sides of the Arab-Israeli conflict, interviewing radical imams and would-be suicide bombers in Gaza, while reporting on the plight of Israeli citizens during the Hezbollah missile attacks in the war of 2006. As a young reporter in 1982, he was taken hostage by the Palestinian guerrilla fighters in the West Beirut, where he was born again in his Christian faith. During 2016 election campaign, he served on the National Security and Foreign Policy Advisory Board for President Donald J. Trump. We're delighted, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you Ken Timmerman. Ken, thank you so much for joining us on this broadcast today of Let's Face the Issues. We're looking forward to a dialogue and conversation with you about your new book.
Young Blood, it's a great pleasure and an honor to be with you here. And I believe that we are facing a potential election heist, which is the name of the book. And I go into a number of different scenarios. But the first thing I really want to start off by saying is why I'm writing this book. This is a novel. And you say, well, why didn't you do this as an investigation? There are lots of investigations out there. Democrats don't pay any attention to them. They claim there's no such thing as voter fraud. So I really wanted to get inside the mind of a Democrat candidate who engages in a massive fraud campaign because he knows he cannot win. So you get inside his mind. I was a politician at one point, so I understand a little bit about these things. I did not commit fraud, nor was I tempted to, but I did learn the secrets of some of those who did cheat, and I wanted to share those secrets with readers in the election heist. I consider this body armor.
Well, Ken, first of all, we're not going to hold it against you that you were a one-time politician. I know.
Thank you.
I know. With President Trump, I find that refreshing that he came out of a business professional background and had no political desires from the standpoint of what you'd normally call a politician. That term sometimes has a pretty dismal understanding. But Ken, in your latest book, The Election Heist, you're calling it a political thriller, and it involves some what you call hijacking of the 2020 election. How much of the book is real, even though it's viewed as a novel thriller?
Right. Well, that's the whole point. I call it fact-based fiction. The characters are imaginary, but the actual facts and the technology that I explore in the election heist, the ways of hacking our electronic voting machines, including the ones that we have here in Florida. And by the way, a little spoiler alert, a lot of the book takes place in Florida during the, I'm afraid to say it, folks, the recount, which I believe is going to be taking place. Donald Trump ought to be winning this election with 316 electoral votes at least. It ought to be a landslide, blowout election. I think the riots around the country have sickened Americans of all political stripes against the Democrats. I can't imagine a police officer in the country voting for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris after they had 4 days at their convention to condemn the violence, and they never did so once. So if all things happened normally, we had a free and fair election, Donald Trump would win with a landslide. I want to give you in the book, The Election Heist, some of the signs to watch for, the warning signs of things that I am convinced the Democrats are going to do in November, so you'll be prepared for them and you'll be able to call them out.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Ken Timmerman. He has written the book, Election Heist. Let me remind you that telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. As you listen to the dialogue and the discussion about this book and about the ominous view of what may take place or perhaps shall take place November the 3rd election, please feel free to call in 831-0917. Love to have your dialogue and discussion. Questions that you might have for Ken as we talk about this book. We have a caller. Go ahead with your question or comment, please. Hello? Go ahead with your question or comment, please. Evidently, we've lost our caller. Ken, in the writing of your book, how much of the experience as a Republican congressman nominee is packed into this election heist book? Well, coming from a firsthand politician's background.
Right, a temporary politician. Well, I ran in Maryland's 8th District, which is just outside of Washington, D.C., suburban Maryland, going up into the conservative heartland in Carroll County and Frederick County, going over into western Maryland. And so you'll find a lot of those places in the book. It traces the campaign in that district between a Democrat who sort of skates past every election. He doesn't have to worry about what's going on, but this time he gets redistricted and 100,000 conservative Republicans get thrown in his district. He's thrown off his keel, if you wish, and goes to political allies who read him into a program to cheat, on how to cheat to win the seat. Now, I first got the idea during my own election campaign. We fought very hard. There are a lot of Jewish residents, Jewish Democrats in my district, and I went to just about every synagogue. I'm a strong supporter of the State of Israel. I consider myself a Christian Zionist, and I have been to Israel many times, had many contacts with senior Israeli leaders, was actually in the trench with Benjamin Netanyahu in 2006 when he was out of power up in the northern part of Israel as Hezbollah rockets were raining down. So I would go and tell these stories. I would talk about my opponent's abysmal record towards Israel. He paid lip service towards Israel but never actually supported them. And I was winning heavily in those Jewish districts. When the results came in, I lost by a landslide in those very places that all of our polls showed that I was winning. And that kind of got things, that got the cogs going in my brain. We did an investigation after that election when we heard reports of voting machines that were not functioning properly. This was the Romney-Obama election, and people came to us and said, hey, I pressed Romney, and it showed Obama. And they would go back 3 times to the election judge and show what happened, and it would still keep forcing the vote for Obama. And I believe that there were serious problems with those election machines. We actually surveyed the individuals who voted on a couple of those machines to find out if they were willing to share the independent. And we won the independent vote 70-30%. But when we saw the results of the voting machine, that didn't show up. So we were never able to prove that, but that got me thinking, well, so it is possible to hack these machines. I started researching, and I discovered that one of our national nuclear labs had already investigated those touchscreen voting machines back in 2002 and determined it took exactly 45 seconds to open them up, upload a virus, and walk away. You could hack those machines in 45 seconds, 2 minutes if you were less skillful. So I started looking into all this technology, and you're going to find a lot of that in the book. I think it's important because these machines, anything that is run by software, can be hacked. And I believe the Democrats are going to do whatever it takes to win this election that they can't win any other way.
Well, Ken, are you saying that in your book, The Election Heist, Are you saying or intimating that, God forbid that would happen, I don't, you know, that the Democrats are going to use some fraudulent methodology to try to win the election? Why do you think that?
Well, I believe that they will. I believe they will do whatever it takes. I think we're seeing that with the riots. And by the way, I already had those Antifa riots in my book, which was finished in February. I had them going down Fifth Avenue in New York and smashing the windows at Trump Tower, which is exactly what they did 4 months later in real life. They're creating chaos. They want an atmosphere of chaos. You mentioned in your introduction something which I think is tremendously important, the delays that we're going to see with absentee ballots. These are all tactics the Democrats will use. They intend to flood election offices with late-term ballots, ballots that have been either voted illegally. It doesn't matter. They're going to tie up the election offices with millions of ballots that shouldn't be there, and it's one of their tactics to get the authorities, especially in Democrat states, a place like Wisconsin, which has a Democrat governor now, which went for Trump in 2016. They're hoping to get the governor to step in, the secretary of state to step in, and call the election for Biden. So I think they will do whatever it takes, and I lay out a lot of these techniques. It's not one technique. There are dozens and dozens of dirty tricks that I believe they will be using in November.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we're discussing with Ken Timmerman today his new book, Election Heist, wherein he uses fictional characters to paint the picture of what is in reality the potential for November the 3rd election as we vote for President Donald J. Trump. The telephone number is 831-0917, 831-0917. We'd love to have your dialogue and discussion, your input or your questions for Ken in relationship to that book and what he's saying. Ken, your main character of Nelson Aguilar is a wealthy Hispanic conservative Republican, pro-life and pro-Israel, who prays with his campaign workers. Is he based on a real person?
He is fictional, entirely fictional, but I wanted to find somebody who was completely different from me, so nobody could say I was, you know, writing the a sour grapes version of my own election, which is not the case. So I invented somebody who I thought would really have a very good chance of winning in this particular district, which is 35% Hispanic. And normally, those voters up in Maryland would be voting Democrat. Well, Nelson Aguilar is a media star. He used to work for as a war correspondent for a national TV network. He left there, came back to Maryland, bought up a radio station. So now he's on the local radio all the time with his political commentaries into the Berrio, right? The Hispanic suburbs of Washington, D.C. He owns them. And that's one of the things that gives him such power, makes him such a convincing candidate and such a challenge to the incumbent Democrat representative there. And that challenge is what finally pushes the Democrat over the edge. He goes over to the dark side, if you wish, and signs up for this election fraud campaign that's being run by the National Democratic Party.
Yes. Ken, I'm looking at an article headline that says more than 500,000 mail-in ballots were rejected in the primaries. That could make the difference in the battleground states this fall. Then the article reads more than 540,000 mail ballots were rejected during the primaries across 23 states this year alone. Nearly a quarter of all the battlegrounds for the fall, illustrating how missed delivery deadlines, inadvertent mistakes and uneven enforcement of the rules could differentiate votes and affect the outcome of the presidential election. You touched on that just a moment ago about the mail-in ballots. What are some of the pitfalls and the problems that you see? The argument that I have had some to make to me, well, what's wrong with mail-in ballots? Why can't we do that? What are the pitfalls and the problems, and what is the protocol for the mail service to use in delivering those ballots? Do we have problems with, is it the post office problem, or is it the election headquarters and the those responsible for the mail out and receiving of the ballots? Where does the problems lie, and what is the major ingredients in that problem?
Sure. The biggest problem is what the Democrats have been calling universal mail-in ballots. That is the effort by California, Nevada, and other states to send the actual ballots, not a ballot request, but the actual ballots to everybody on the voter rolls. Now, the reason that's a problem is because you have so much dead wood on the voter rolls. In Los Angeles County alone, my friends at Judicial Watch sued and won last year to get them to remove 1.6 million people from the voter rolls. That's in one county, in one state, because they were either deceased or they had moved out of the jurisdiction. I mean, it's absolutely extraordinary. So if you vote, if you mail ballots to all of those people dead or moved out of the district, well, what's going to happen then? Who's going to get the ballots? Who's going to fill them out? They're going to be filled out, and they're going to be filled out by Democrat operatives because they know who those people are, and they're going to intercept the ballots. And we've had just this past week, one of those operatives actually confessed in an article in the New York Post on how they did it. So we know how they do it. We know how they intercept the ballots. We know they have the intent to do that. It's just a massive invitation to fraud. Now, the problem is not, and this is important to, for people to understand, normal absentee ballots. Absentee ballots have been around for decades and decades. They've never been a problem, except if you vote them too late or if you have changed your signature. But if you send them in on time, send them in a week ahead of time, they arrive at the election office, or where I am in Nassau County, we can just drop them off at the supervisor of elections office and other early voting places in special drop boxes. So it doesn't even go through the post office. So normal absentee ballots are not a problem. The problem is this universal mail-in ballot, which goes automatically to everybody on the voter roll, including dead people and people who have moved out of the district. And those can be intercepted and voted fraudulently.
Yes. Ken, you've touched on a very important issue there that most are not aware of and cannot differentiate between the two. That is the mail-in ballots versus the absentee ballots. In the state of Florida, up until 2016, they were called absentee ballots. Who, what, where, why, I do not know. But in 2016, the voter laws in the state of Florida were tweaked simply to refer to it as mail-in ballot rather than absentee ballot. Explain to our listeners quickly the differentiation there, and then we'll take our next caller.
Yeah, and by the way, I happen to believe that that 2016 law was passed with the purpose of confusing voters in future elections when the Democrats would use that term mail-in ballot to make people think that their absentee ballots were not secure. The absentee ballots are secure. Our mail-in ballot system in Florida is secure. What is not secure is this universal mail-in ballot where you actually, where the counties actually mail ballots, not ballot applications, but ballots to every person on the voter roll, again, including dead people and people who have moved out of the state. That's the problem. It's the universal mail-in ballot that's a problem.
Yes, Ken, hang in there for a moment. We have another caller. Go over the question or comment, please.
Yeah, thanks, Ken, for being on today. I want to just make a quick, very strong statement, and this is to the listeners this morning. This gentleman you're listening to, Ken Timmerman, is a national treasure with respect to national intelligence from a conservative and a conservative Christian political point of view. You need to get his book, Election Heist. I just finished reading, and there's two characters in there that are particularly interesting. One is called the Crocodile, and the other is a fellow named Navid, N-A-V-I-D. These are the people that really are going to impact the next election. Several states in this country are filled with evil people who are connected to the mafia and other nefarious organizations, and they are very much, in my opinion, in bed with the Democrats and do the things that caused Ken to lose his election in Maryland. Be certain, absolutely certain, if you hear my voice, that you get Ken's book, Election Heist, you read it, and you make this a matter of prayer. Father God, help us avoid this miasma that lies ahead of us on November the 3rd. Thanks, Ken, for writing that book. It is a great read, and I appreciate what you've done. Doc, thanks for putting him on the air. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for your comments. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take about a one-minute break at the top of the hour for our news. Hang in there. Don't turn your dials. We'll be right back as we continue our conversation with Ken Timmerman, talking about his book, The Election Heist.
and Conservative Theological University in Jacksonville, Florida. To learn more, visit conservative.edu.